You want your child to thrive and reach their full potential. K-12 can help them get there. K-12-powered schools are tuition-free, accredited online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. This is not your typical homeschooling. With state-certified teachers specially trained to teach online, your child will learn at their speed, at home, with innovative, engaging technology. Join the more than 3 million families who've chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast to enroll today.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. Saudi Arabia, the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia, led by the Crown Prince, MBS, affectionately known, Mohammed bin Salman. I welcome Ord Khitri of the Foundation for the Defense of Democracies, who with his colleagues have produced a measure of Saudi Arabia right now, here in the 21st century, in the year 2023. And the contest apparently underway between major powers over Saudi Arabia's affections, needs, circumstances. In the piece at FTD, I go to two quotes that are revelatory, I believe. One from two Wall Street Journal correspondents, Stephen Callan and Summer Saeed, in March of this year. Quote, the Crown Prince, MBS, has said he expects that by playing major powers against each other, Saudi Arabia can eventually pressure Washington to concede to its demands for better access to U.S. weapons and nuclear technology. The second quote is from Graham Wood, a staff writer for The Atlantic. The quote from the Crown Prince rhetorically, where is the potential in the world today? The Crown Prince answered his own question. It's in Saudi Arabia, and if you want to miss it, I believe other people in the East are going to be super happy. Ord, a very good evening to you. I'm presuming the Crown Prince is now in conversation with the East following the news of Xi Jinping and the Chinese Communist Party advancing a peace agreement between Riyadh and Tehran, who have been at odds for many years and, to my knowledge, are in active contest in two battlefields, Yemen and Syria. But in any event, the peace gesture was made by Xi Jinping. It was embraced by both sides. More to learn. That would indicate that MBS is leaning to the East. Has the U.S., to your knowledge at this point, responded in any fashion to the remark by MBS that he's going Beijing's way? Good evening to you.
Good evening to you. I don't know that the U.S. has responded explicitly to those words, but I do know that Jake Sullivan, the U.S. National Security Advisor, announced yesterday that he would be traveling to Saudi Arabia tomorrow for talks with Saudi leaders, including reportedly MBS himself. So the U.S. appears to be responding with actions, if not with words, to concerns that we are now at a pivotal point for U.S.-Saudi relations. Tensions between the two countries have been high on issues including oil pricing, human rights, and arms sales. And while the U.S. has traditionally been the Saudis' preeminent great power partner, the Saudis have, John, as you just mentioned, been taking steps towards China, which made a splash by brokering last month a reopening of diplomatic ties between Iran and Saudi Arabia.
The contest then turns to what needs to be done. We set up the circumstance right now, the apparent leaning of Saudi Arabia towards Beijing, which is, there's some logic to it because Eurasia, the world island, is dominated by two powers right now, one at war, Moscow, and one allied with the Moscow at war, that would be Beijing. There are other players, subplots, Tehran for one, Pyongyang for one. And now Saudi Arabia looks to be joining into, in some fashion, the world islands conversation about the future. So you have recommendations with your colleagues of what needs to be done. What is a major non-NATO ally, and how would that advance the U.S. case with Riyadh?
Sure. Thanks for your question, John. As my colleague Brad Bowman and I mentioned, we published a report. We talk about how the decades-long arrangement in which the U.S. essentially guaranteed Saudi security in return for the reliable export of oil may be in the ropes. We analyzed the relationship and concluded that it's well worth saving. We suggested that Washington and Riyadh negotiate a new strategic partnership agreement, including concessions by both sides on key issues, in order to put the relationship on a firmer footing. And one of those steps that we recommended the U.S. take is to declare Saudi Arabia a major non-NATO ally. It's a status that a number of other countries already have, and it facilitates defense cooperation between the U.S. and Saudi Arabia. We also recommended that the U.S. designate Saudi Arabia as a major defense partner, a status currently only held by India. And it's interesting to note that the meetings that Jake Sullivan will be attending in Saudi Arabia this weekend include not only Saudi leaders, but also leaders of the UAE and of India.
These designations, are they treaties? Are they like treaties? Does this require the advising consent of the U.S. Senate?
No, they do not. And that's a very good question. There is, I think, considerable discomfort with Saudi Arabia in the Congress these days. Congress has in recent years made efforts to block various arms sales to Saudi Arabia. And so the recommendations that we set forth are designed to be things that the executive branch, the Biden administration, can do on their own without Congress going along. Now, Congress could obviously block any step, but they don't affirmatively have to approve this as if it were a treaty. They only really have to acquiesce, in other words, not take steps to affirmatively block it.
One twist of this is the perception recently aired that the U.S. is withdrawing from the Middle East, Afghanistan, Iraq, the very careful handling of Syria. Is that perception in Riyadh? Does it doubt that it would be significant to me a major defense posture with a military force that's not much around?
Well, I think that is one of the key concerns that the Saudis indeed have, and one of the reasons why they are reaching out to the Chinese, why they are trying to reduce tensions between them and Iran. It's this concern that whereas the U.S. has had their back in the past, the U.S. may no longer have their back. And I think that several things have led to that. One is that the Iranians appear to be proceeding vigorously towards a nuclear weapon, and it's not clear that the U.S. is going to stop that. That would obviously completely reshuffle the deck in the Middle East. The Saudis are also concerned that Iran and its proxies have several times attacked Saudi Arabia in recent years, and the U.S. has not responded particularly aggressively. These are all reasons why the Saudis are concerned and are looking elsewhere. And so one of the things that we suggest a new strategic partnership agreement should do is to reiterate the U.S. defense commitments to Saudi Arabia, but in a way that is measured and would not require explicit congressional approval.
Nuclear weapon, the suspect nuclear weapon in Iran. The administration has been, at least from the reporting, entertaining a reawakening of the 2015 Iran deal in some fashion, cash transfer, guarantees, transparency. Does MBS welcome the 2015 deal? Does that help Riyadh?
I think what Riyadh is hoping is that the U.S. manages to stop the Iranian nuclear weapons program without unleashing Iran to increase its regionally destabilizing activities in other arenas. The problem with the JCPOA from the Saudi perspective, from the Israeli perspective, so far as I can tell, is that in exchange for a halt for a while to Iran's nuclear program, Iran suddenly had access to all of these previously frozen assets, which it used to ramp up its troublemaking in the region through its proxies. So the Saudis are concerned about Iranian nuclear weapons program. They are concerned about Iranian support for Iranian proxies in the region. Their ideal would be for the U.S. to stop Iran's nuclear program without making concessions in other areas.
Arms transfers. The MBS refers to weapons. He needs weapons. He needs the best weapons. He needs technology. The weaponry right now, to my memory, in Saudi Arabia is U.S.-based. It would be considerable change to go to a Chinese-based weaponry. Is that something that is credible, that Riyadh would spend that kind of money to change systems, change refits, change technical details, even the people they would have to be in Riyadh to service that equipment? Is that what they're thinking?
Well, that is, you know, that is the point that our report emphasizes, that we're not sure that the Saudis have entirely thought through. You know, they're so dependent on U.S. weaponry currently. And, you know, you don't just buy weapons and then, you know, forget about it. What you do is you have to maintain those weapons. You have to buy spare parts. You have to buy ammunition for those weapons. And the challenge is that if the Saudis try to integrate Chinese weapon systems in a meaningful way into their arsenal, or a more meaningful way than they have done already, the U.S. Congress seems likely to block the repairs and the updating and the ammunition, et cetera, that the Saudis need for their current U.S. weapon system. So as we point out, it's not really a particularly feasible thing to do. They would need to not only buy new Chinese weapon systems, but really forsake the existing U.S. weapon systems. And frankly, U.S. weapons are the best weapons in the world. So I don't know that it makes sense for them to do that, but they certainly are making noises in the direction of increasing their purchases from China. Now, whether that is something they really intend to do or some kind of posturing is not entirely clear.
Fossil fuels, clean technology, green, those are all themes that the Biden administration advances. No fossil fuels, green technology, climate change. How does that suit Saudi Arabia, given its wealth?
Well, I think Saudi Arabia is concerned. They are concerned that their economy is very, very dependent on fossil fuels. MBS's 2030 project is designed in part to shift Saudi Arabia away from that dependence on fossil fuels. That's one of the reasons why they say they want to shift to nuclear energy. They also want to up their game when it comes to solar power, and they want to increase the vitality of their economy overall. So they're concerned that their gravy train when it comes to fossil fuels may be coming to an end, and they're trying to prepare for the next stage.
Is there dispute about fossil fuels between Washington and Riyadh now? Would there be a dispute in future? The missionary status of the United States is well known. Does it not go to Riyadh and just sort of not talk about it?
Well, so the U.S. Obviously is interested in transitioning away from fossil fuel. I would say the biggest tensions right now between the U.S. and Saudi Arabia over fossil fuels have to do with the pricing of fossil fuel. We've seen a couple of times in recent months where the U.S. Went to Saudi Arabia and said, can you please put more fossil fuel on the market, pump more in order to reduce the global price, especially in light of the Russia-Ukraine war and the tensions there. And the Saudis have refused. And so the Biden administration responded very aggressively, especially the first time, saying, oh, we're going to revisit our relationship with Saudi Arabia, etc. One of the things that we recommend as part of a strategic partnership agreement is that the U.S. and Saudi Arabia find a new formula for communicating together on stabilizing the world price of oil. But there's two other points that I think are very important with regard to Saudi oil revenue and which don't get a lot of airplay. One is that the Saudis agreed during the Nixon administration and basically stuck to it. They agreed to insist that all purchases by any country of fossil fuels from Saudi Arabia be conducted in U.S. dollars. And this has been very important to maintaining the dollar's primacy as the world's currency. It props up the dollar. It also makes U.S. sanctions, which heavily leverage the dollar, more effective.
We have about 30 seconds, Ord. Go ahead.
Okay. The final issue that I'd say is also important, if the Saudis committed during the Nixon administration, and they've continued to do it, to spend a lot of their fossil fuel revenue on investing in U.S. debt. Currently, it's about $120 billion a year. The Saudis have threatened to reduce it. I think it's very important to the United States, and as part of a strategic partnership, that the Saudis commit to continuing to invest in U.S. treasuries to that magnitude.
Ord Khitri of the Foundation for the Defense of Democracies. When we come back, terrorism and human rights. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
Your child deserves an education that sets them up for success. K-12 knows that learning isn't one size fits all and has options tailored to each child's needs, interests, and goals for the future. K-12 powered schools are tuition-free, accredited online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. Students learn at their speed, at home, from state-certified teachers specially trained to teach online. Join the more than 3 million families who've chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast to enroll today.